Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Dane, for so gently guiding us this morning to really be present. We've all arrived. We're all here. My name is Suze Appel, and if for those of you who are new, I'm one of the local Dharma leaders, and I don't know if anyone who joined us a little late might be brand new. If so, welcome. It's nice to see everybody. So one of the joys of being a local Dharma leader is that every month, all of us spend an hour or more with Tewari. We share our thoughts and ideas about how we want to talk about the next month's topic. And for this whole year, she and Tim both have really encouraged us to tell our own stories of how our practices have been progressing and where we've been at different junctures of the path, with the idea that sharing some of what we've been learning over these relating to the different pictures might be helpful to the rest of us in the Sangha. And these conversations is kind of like being in a Dharma intensive. I always learn so much. And last month, as we were discussing the second ox herding picture, one of the local Dharma leaders said he sees the second picture as a place between the first and the third. And that really resonated with me. So especially the relationship between the first picture and the second. So that's going to be the focus of my talk this morning. Looking at transitions from the first picture to the second. And as part of this conversation on transition, I'm going to also touch on a few other kind of sub-issues. How we move from trusting others to trusting ourselves. How we begin to be comfortable with not knowing, with the confusion and lack of clarity. And how we begin to let the heart into the process that was previously pretty controlled by the mind. So in this first ox herding picture, which of course we looked at all last month, the question was for me, what was she looking back to? And I think she was looking at, you know, what the culture and family and friends were telling her, you know, what she should be looking for and where she should be looking. She was also looking behind her in terms of how she has searched before in her life and what that process has been like. I've been a spiritual seeker pretty much from the time I was really young. And back then, I didn't know what I was searching for. You know, probably answers to big questions like the meaning of life and community, clarity, direction, confidence. I don't know. I know I was looking, and I spent a lot of time in the synagogue as a kid. So I really identified with this first picture. I started looking at what family and culture said I should be looking for. So I was a teenager in the 60s. So it was kind of natural that I got involved in radical politics, civil rights work, work against the Vietnam War, bringing with me so much of the Old Testament words about justice and righteousness. It seemed like a really good fit. I loved the connections, the friendships, the talks into the wee hours, trying to understand history and the big issues of our times. And I loved feeling and believing that I was making a difference, that we were making a difference. The drive to do something about the pain in the world was very strong. And I loved being part of what back then we called, you know, the power of the people. I even learned a whole lot from my times in jail. And while the draw of politics and social justice, pro-peace work continues to be strong for me, it turned out to not be the right fit for this deeper searching. In my 30s, I tried going back to Judaism. I think it was a kind of a combination of things. I was in my early years, I was really devoted to the synagogue. I had an Orthodox grandpa who lived with us, and I loved him very much. My older brother was involved in his temple, and so I thought, well, this is where my search is taking me. back to the synagogue, to God, to Judaism. It all felt so familiar. You know, I knew all the songs and I knew when to lean left and right and bend my knees and stand up straight. And so I came back to the synagogue when my son was a preteen, but again, it really didn't feel right. In college and well into my 20s, I tried Christianity. I liked the Gospel of Matthew. And my first job in Seattle was as a peace organizer within three Protestant denominations. And my first husband was a minister. And so there were moments of real connection and a real resonation with some of the things that I was experiencing, but mostly I felt kind of lost there. Then I dabbled in New Age spiritualism, esoteric teachings, native spiritual practices and the like, you know, and the connections with people on the path were really strong, and I loved the connection to earth and nature and indigenous people, and it didn't really stick. And along the way, there were many efforts at intentional community, moving back to the land, building something together, creating an alternative to mainstream culture. So all of these pulls, just like in the first picture, I was searching for something, but none of them were right. I didn't really believe in God, so Judaism and Christianity didn't really work. And there was too much woo-woo in the New Age spiritualism for me to accept. I loved and still love radical politics, but I never liked how people were treating each other. Community building is really hard, and I'm still working on that one. So far into my 30s, I was still searching. I was that ox herder looking back over my shoulder. And then my older sister, Nancy, received a terminal diagnosis. Nancy was older by 6 years. She was my mentor, teacher, friend, confidant, confidant, brave, wise, funny, beautiful, the one whose guidance helped me through almost all my big passages, graduate school, divorce, job, single parenting, buying a house, life direction, and the one whose love for me was big and complicated. When she was in her last year or so of life, she discovered Stephen Levine and Buddhism. She went to a retreat or two with him and encouraged me to read his earlier book, Who Dies? I read it and really liked it, and I read it through the lens of my life more so than through the lens of the process of dying. I underlined huge parts of that book, even though I didn't really know what any of those lines meant. But they were calling to me. Words like, we see the world through our idea of who we think we are. We must allow ourselves to be infinitely insecure in order to know the truth. Freedom is the ability to have or not have what you want without it closing your heart. And this other phrase of healing is the title we give to the phenomenon of the mind and heart coming back into balance. I was so drawn to these words, I just didn't know what any of them meant. And then Nancy died. A grief so big that I really didn't know what to do with it. Ellen Bass, the poet, calls that an obesity of grief. So 3 weeks after Nancy died, my best friend and I went to Brighton Bush Hot Springs. It's a fantastic intentional community about an hour or so east of Salem, Oregon. And we went to a 10-day retreat with Stephen Levine. I remember sitting as they have this big, beautiful meditation hall and wondering what I was doing there. You know, I was still that ox herder looking over my shoulders and going, what in the world? There were things that felt right, but also so unfamiliar. I was kneeling on a bench, sitting in silence, listening to this guy who I had never met before, but his words kept on making more and more sense. They were landing on me and kind of sinking in. I barely knew how to meditate, and I really didn't know what was happening. Many of you who've been on retreat might recognize this kind of mixed experience, confusion, that kind of like, well, what am I really doing here? Why am I here? Comfort, because it kind of feels good and everyone else seems to know what they're doing and liking it, and maybe they know something that I don't. And then a teacher or teachers saying things that really started making sense, and a feeling of safety, even in all the confusion. After a day or two, I felt like I hadn't found the ox, but I had seen the footprints. It felt like I had found my spiritual home, and I still didn't know what it was, but I had that first glimpse of trusting that sense inside of me that was right. No one behind me or outside of me was telling me that this was where I belong. No labels that used to describe my connection to the spiritual life. I just started to trust that sense inside of me. And perhaps not on this first retreat, in fact, undoubtedly not on the first retreat, but early in my practice, I learned about the Kalama Sutta, where the Buddha encouraged us to know for ourselves. This is a short passage from that sutta. He says to the people of the Kalamas, "It is right for you to doubt. Doubt has arisen in you about dubious matters. Come, Kalamas, do not rely on oral tradition or on the lineage of teachers or on holy scriptures or on abstract logic. Do not place blind trust in impressive personalities or in venerated gurus, but examine the issue for yourselves. When you know for yourselves that something is unwholesome and harmful, then you should reject it. And when you know for yourselves that something is wholesome and beneficial, then you should accept it and put it into practice." I learned early on about one of the beautiful paradoxes in the teachings. While as described in this section of the sutta I just read, the Buddha says to see for ourselves, ehi pasiko. We also learn to not necessarily trust what first comes into our minds. We're taught to not really trust our thoughts, to not believe them at first glance. And we learn about conditioning and dependent origination and the power of habits. So building that trust to see for ourselves, building that muscle of knowing for ourselves is a huge part of the path. So the second picture, and I'm not going to put it up just because then I can't read my talk. With the second picture, but everybody knows what it is. The ox herder has a hand over her eyes, and she's squinting into the glaring sun-filled distance. She's kind of looking at footprints, although we can't really see where her eyes are pointed. I think of her as squinting, kind of like staring off and with lots of questions. Is this really what I'm looking for? Will I be disappointed again? Will I keep finding what's wrong in the path like I've done previously? What do I hope for? What do I expect on this path? So many questions and so much uncertainty. It's like, what is ahead and can I trust this? And they're only footprints. I'm still not actually on the path. I'm kind of neither here nor there. Not even sure if I'm going in the right direction. And are these the right footprints? You know, I saw the footprints when I was at Brighton Bush, but still confused. And there's this strong desire to believe that this is the right path. This second picture is, for me, really a picture of transition. You're not here and you're not there. So many times in our lives, that is the truth. We're just kind of stuck in between. This transition from the first picture to the second is the transition, as I was talking about, from listening to what the world behind me and outside of me is telling me to do, to listening to that inner world and beginning to trust what the inner world is telling me. But in addition to that, there are other things happening in this transition. We're navigating a state of confusion and don't know. We're living in this tension between don't know, wanting to know, believing that I know, believing I should know, and then starting to hear the words of the Dharma that say, take refuge in don't know mind. Who early on, a part of the mind responded with, what in the hell is don't know mind? But another part of the mind said, oh, this is interesting. Let's check this out. The commentary for the second picture uses the phrase, looking heavenward. So maybe, I don't know, but maybe there's someone else who knows. So we start looking for teachers. And sometimes that's a hit and miss process. And sometimes if we're lucky, we find a teacher right away. And generally that teacher says, look to yourself to start understanding. Don't just go with whatever I'm saying. All of this knowing and not knowing, wanting to know, there's so much of me in all of this tension, so much selfing and identifying. I know that I held on for years, and I think I still do, to the belief that I should know. And if I don't know right now, I better know soon. Then there are the habits that influence all these transitions, the way we've each always done it. For me, the way, as I had kind of explained early in my talk, the way had been to try it. And when difficulties come up, it means this isn't right for me, so I leave. It never occurred to me in all those years of searching for me to explore and investigate the difficulties. We all have our, you know, modus operandi of how we approach things. Is your habit, your MO, serving you? Mine certainly didn't. I mean, it encouraged me to leave at, if not the first sign of difficulty, at least the third or fourth. I didn't even realize that the difficulty in part was my own resistance, my own desire for clarity. I remember back in the years when Sims was meeting at St. Mark's, and I got to know a lot of people, and sometimes Rodney would say things that people found offensive or they just didn't like, and they said, oh, I'm out of here. You know, I don't like this teacher, and this isn't the way it should be. And it was like they were doing just what I did, you know, so there was difficulty. And then they said, okay, I'm gone. During this transition, I started to learn that the difficulties themselves are a gift. The gift, the difficulty, I think, is telling me and telling us this is what you should be looking at. That sometimes when the practice is hard, that's when there's so much to learn. And then there's the ever-present issue of impatience, wanting to be out of the transition and into the clarity of the next thing. You know, I got to learn that that was just a joke. I mean, if I hadn't known it before, I learned in those early years of the Dharma, there is no fast forward button in life or on the path. When I found the Dharma, it gave me the gift of how to navigate these transitions, even though I wasn't very skilled at the different parts. But the Dharma kept on pointing me in the right direction, you know, right view, right intention, right speech, teachings on impermanence, the poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion, needing a practice that was grounded in sila and ethics, teachings on generosity. And we were exploring all of these teachings in the midst of Sangha. You know, dozens of other people were all learning navigation skills together, which was just became such a joy for me. We looked at how we move from trusting others to trusting ourselves. I talked about that ehi passiko, see for yourself. And we've looked at this morning at how to begin to be more comfortable with not knowing. And that process is an introduction to the truth of anatta, of not self. You know, seeing how identified I was and still am with my beliefs in and my desire for knowing and for clarity. I want to spend the last few minutes of my talk exploring how the heart becomes involved in this process. As I shared, you know, I moved past family and culture and habits quite a bit. and started trusting my own gut. But it always felt for me in those early years that it was the intellect that was setting all the direction. You know, it's making lists of pros and cons and reading the stuff that really resonated with me intellectually. And I was even drawn to the more, you know, kind of the headier teachers. And it took me a long time to embody the teachings and not just receive them in the thinking mind. I remember when I first heard the Pali word citta, which is defined as both heart and mind, I really didn't understand it. I went to an early retreat, and a retreat early in my practice on the Brahma Viharas, and oh my goodness, it was hard. For me, allowing the heart into the process took a lot longer. But here's something that I think is connected to trust. Because as I reflect back on those early years, I think the heart was way more heavily involved than I was aware of or giving it credit. Those footprints that I first saw at Brighton Bush first pointed me to working with the dying. Two friends and I started an organization that summer after Brighton Bush that provided support for people who were dying. It was during their early years of the AIDS crisis. I thought I was really clear about what I was doing when we started Shanti Seattle. But in looking back, I think the heart pointed me in that direction. 10 years later, when Sim started, I joined right up. And I think again that the heart made that decision too. I think I started to trust the process, even though I didn't know all of what was involved in that process. I didn't know how the heart was involved. So this morning, as we break into small groups, perhaps you will share with each other what moved you from that first picture to the second. For me, it was clearly the death of my sister. It was a gift to me to get me on the path, like the gifts of the Buddha of aging, illness, and death. And that gift also led me back to appreciating all the other searching I had done in earlier years for connection and meaning and community, responding to the suffering of the world, looking for quiet and ritual and touching the sacred. I think in my practice, I still am glimpsing new footprints. I continue to question what they mean. And hopefully I've matured some in how I'm dealing with the questions. So often, so many of the teachers will read one of Rilke's words from his letter to a young poet, where he says, live the questions themselves. Stay with the questions. I realize I've developed some real patience with that process, to be okay with the questions, with the confusion. It's like what Wendell Berry has written, and he says, when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And when we no longer know which way to go, we have begun our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings. In this second picture, that even in the midst of a state of confusion and uncertainty, a beginning trust grows, a trust that keeps guiding me. In that trust and in the confusion is where I think I begin my real journey. I've grown to really enjoy the process and contemplate the possibility that I'm never going to actually find out all the answers. And I think that's okay. So this transition of the second picture is a story of developing trust and confidence. Trust of what my inner world is telling me, even when the words are confusing. Trust what my heart is telling the mind, even when I'm not really part of that conversation. And it's like the last two lines of Thomas R. Smith's poem, Trust, where he says, and sometimes you sense how faithfully your life is being delivered, even though you can't read the address. Thank you so much for your attention. And I just want to say a couple words about the value of breakout groups, especially this year. This whole year, it's an exciting one. All of these oxfording pictures are talking about each of us on our path. And we each have different, we're taking different steps, and we're at different places in different moments. We've gotten there through different doorways. And how we share with each other is, I think, an important way of really understanding these pictures and understanding the path in even a deeper way. So I know that some people need to leave. Your lives are busy and full. And if you have to go, be well, and thank you for joining us. So Dane was going to start helping to put together the breakout groups, which I appreciate. Thank you.
Yep.
And Peter, goodbye. Glad you were with us.
Yeah, goodbye to anyone who's got to leave.
And I think Deanna's leaving. And goodbye. Thanks to everybody who can stay. And and again, talking about your own transition, both in terms of trusting your own gut, how you deal with being in states of confusion or uncertainty or lack of clarity, how that these beginning muscles of trust and confidence are building, and of course, anything else that you want to talk about. And as Dane is doing that, I'll share again what we often talk about in these groups, a time to really practice full-hearted listening. We give each person a chance to really say what they want to say. We don't offer advice. We hold in confidence what people share so that there's a really important environment of trust and safety. So enjoy your small group, and we'll see you at 11:15. Well, we're coming back. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Let everyone return. Sometimes it takes a minute or two, especially if people are just finishing up a sentence that they want to be able to finish. So we've got, about 12 minutes to share anything that you want to share from your group, from your own experience about transitions and trust and being with the uncertainty of this oxfording picture. And you can either raise your hand, or if you go to the reactions button at the bottom of your screen and click on that, you can raise your hand.
I'm looking for old people. Jean.
Jean, yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you, Sean? You're. Oh, you didn't know you were talking. Okay, she said she was looking for old people. That's because we have an announcement later. There's a new Kalyanamita group starting for people over 70. Yeah. So, does anyone want to share? Feel free to unmute. I think Dane has given it. Good, Lauren, please.
Well, I think I was just looking because I take notes, and I think you said something about, wasn't your main point, but you said something about the Sangha. Yes, transition, confusion, and then Sangha. And each of us mentioned in our group the importance of the Sangha and a transition when we realized that the Sangha was really important. And that was really important to me, that I made the decision, because I followed a spiritual path for a long time, different And I didn't realize, and I'd started to meditate a long time ago, you know, before I started at Sims, but I made the decision that I wanted to participate. And so I started volunteering and getting KM groups and then going to retreats. And that made all the difference as far as going further down the path. Yeah, I really, really needed the Sangha. And the Sangha has been a real, that's made all the difference.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think a lot of us can really agree with that. There, especially in those times of confusion and difficulty, there's something about being able to talk to a Dharma brother or Dharma sister. And I think about, you know, sometimes you'll say to friends who don't have a practice and you'll say, oh, I'm going through a really rough time. And they go, oh, I'm sorry. And you say the same thing to a Dharma brother or sister. And they say, great, tell me more about it, you know, and you kind of explore it together. I mean, they don't mean great in terms of they're happy that you're going through a rough time, but great in terms of the material it has for your practice and that you're probably sharing the difficulty through that Dharma lens. That so the Sangha is like the Buddha said to Ananda, it's not just part of this spiritual practice, it's the entire thing. So who else would like to share? Judith, please. There you go.
I think a lot of us, I certainly did, really related to your story, because I think a lot of us have gone through a similar journey of being, I know I did, of being a very early seeker and stumbling around and, you know, and then radical politics and then back to the land and then the whole trip, and then finally having things start to come into focus. So we appreciated your story.
Oh, thanks. I think that's what Tiweri and Tim understood when they were saying, when we first met in December about this, the LDL said, so what are we going to talk about? You know, because we didn't know these stories. And Tiweri during our Sunday planning said, share your own story, you know, to say what it's been like for you to navigate the path and where you are at different times. And so thank you. I'm glad. I was a little, you know, you're always nervous when you're going to give a talk. So yeah, thanks, Judith. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've all had our own journeys, haven't we? And then it's such a joy that here we are. We ended up here together in our little boxes. Anyone else? Yeah, John, you want to say something?
Oh, I didn't mean to be raising my hand. I was trying to adjust on your phone.
Okay, you don't have to then. If you want to, feel free to.
I could add what our group, the three of us in our group, pointed to something that I think is real important, and that is the, I guess, both need and benefit of treating ourselves differently when we're trying to deal with, to get beyond something traumatic that's happened in our lives, and the importance of, you know, looking at the way we're living, dealing with things, and using things, taking approaches that are kinder to ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, in contrast to some of the standard ways of doing things. So that, anyway, that really made an impression on me.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it goes along a little bit with what Lauren was saying about Sangha too, because I think sometimes others in the Sangha will remind us, that being kinder to oneself, or I can't even tell you the number of times a Dharma friend will say, well, have you tried some metta? You know, have you just tried to like soften around what's going on? Not to bypass it, not to sugarcoat it, but to, like you were saying, John, to, you know, how are you treating yourself in these hard times? Thanks for that. Anyone else? We got a couple minutes if anyone wants to say. Bruce, does your cat have anything to say? Looks very comfy.
Cat, Gremlin says he really, really liked your talk.
Thank you. I appreciate everyone's participation, and I think, you know, I keep hearing each Sunday that these small groups are important to people, to be have a chance to share and to listen and feel like, and remember that for some of us, these Oxfording pictures and commentaries do not resonate. And that's okay too. You know, that we're, you know, and at least from my experience when looking at, well, why don't they resonate? What's this resistance? Or is it resistance? Is it confusion? What is it? That's something to explore too. Not from the standpoint of, I need to get it right and I need to really love these Oxfording pictures. Some people may never. But I think that the direction of this year of looking at our path and our practice is really an important one. So again, thank you so much for joining us today. And anyone who is new, I think Forrest, I'm not sure I've met you before. Welcome. Nice to have you. And everyone else looks familiar to me, which is nice. So I'm going to hand it off to Dane for announcements and closing.
Right. Thanks, Suze. We'll do a quick message on Donna. Sims and its teachers freely offer the teachings of the Buddha to all, regardless of ability to pay. We appreciate your generosity, Donna, today, and many thanks for the Donna you have already offered to support Sims and our teachers' livelihood. Donna to teachers and Sims can be made by going to the donation tab on the homepage of the Sims website as well. Just quick meta to close us out. If you want to gently close your eyes or pull the soft gaze. May all beings be safe and protected from harm. May all beings have love arising. May all beings be free. All right. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Feel free to unmute and say goodbye or type it in the chat. It's nice to see everyone today.
Yeah, really nice to see everybody.